Yeah, it wasn't until I had that phone screening with the women's shelter where they asked me all sorts of things about, has he ever put his hands around your neck? Has he ever raped you? Have you ever been held at gunpoint? Where the person on the phone tells me that I'm at extremely high risk for fatality via my partner.
You're listening to Alchemical Voices, a podcast exploring the lives of BIPOC, transracial adoptees, and survivors of complex trauma. Hi, I'm Jaslyn, your host, a nurse, and trauma release practitioner, curiously observing the human experience. As a Black woman and survivor of human trafficking, I've encountered many, many hardships. On the road to recovery, I discovered that storytelling unites us at heart and is where we find healing, inspiration, and encouragement. In each episode, you will hear stories from courageous souls, and we will touch on subjects such as identity confusion, the impacts of racism, complex trauma, transracial adoption, and much more. How do we rise amid trials and tribulations? How do we invite softness into our lives? We touch on these and many other questions, so tune in to experience transformative storytelling and let's heal together.
So I spent 19 months there, and it is a co-ed boarding school, or it was a co-ed boarding school. And this school was run on rules that were called standards, and you either acted in standard or you acted out of standard. And if you were cursing, that was out of standard. If you weren't living up to the military cleaning rules, where every day you get up at, everyone gets up at the exact same time, you have to make your bed and be able to, like, you know, drop a dime in it and it's got to bounce back up. You have to space all of the clothes out in your closet evenly. You have to pull everything in your drawers forward. Like, everything about this school was checked off and controlled. And they had a system within the school for students to start doing this to each other. They had a disciplinary committee, which was made up of students. And the role of these students and of any staff was, anytime there was any out of standard behavior, if you weren't in dress code, which was business casual all of the time. If you were a woman, your clothes were always too tight. Always, always, always too tight. And so you would frequently get written a crew. This was the disciplinary action. And so that was an hour of manual labor. This school had no cleaning crew. This school had no maintenance crew. This school had no groundskeeping crew. It had a small kitchen staff, but there were only three people in the kitchen staff. And so this school was run off of our labor. It was run off of us being bad and being out of standard. One of the main rules of this school was that they could ban you from anything and anyone. They don't like that me and Molly are spending too much time together because we're best friends. You're going to be put on personal bans. So you can't be within 6 feet of this person. You can't look at them. You can't speak with them. You can't be sitting at a table with them. You're reading a lot of fantasy books. You're going to be on ban. You're banned from reading fantasy books. You can only read recovery books now. Because I am a woman and was a teenager who got a lot of male attention and male gaze, the minute that I arrived at this school, I was put on boy bans for 9 months at a co-ed school. I could not look at, talk to, be caught whispering to, sit directly next to a boy. The only time that I could do that was in group therapy.
What in the actual wackadoodle noodle was that place? It sounds like a mad...
Insane. This ban, this system of bans You can be banned from anything. I mean, I will tell you, Jaslyn, I'm sure it won't come as a surprise, but almost every girl that I knew at Carlbrook was put on boy bands at some point or another for an extended period of time because she needed to reflect on, you know, wanting to talk with boys or flirting with them or wanting to have relationships with them. But I never, in my 19 months there, did I ever see a male student be put on girl bands or be banned from talking to girls.
Mm-hmm. So it was like instilling shame in the young women and making them feel like they somehow were wrongful for showing any type of interest in the opposite sex.
In the other half of the population.
Yeah, that's strange, weird.
It was very, you know, it didn't take, or it took until, you know, just recently of being like, the amount of sexism, misogyny,
yeah,
that were baked into the structure of these rules. And so basically the way that this school ran was, you know, there are classes happening Monday through Friday. And school happens year round. And in order to graduate from this program, you don't necessarily have to graduate high school from there, because I was at that age. I did. Mm-hmm. I needed to graduate high school to get the fuck out of that place and get my diploma. And so it was classes during the day and then group therapy every single day after school for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then in order to graduate from this program, you had to go through 5 different therapeutic workshops that were multiple days long, took place with your graduating class, happened in the back of the campus, a 15-minute walk away from any other building, in a small modular building where all of the fake therapists that were advisors would put you through these extremely unethical therapeutic practices and basically break you to the point of screaming, crying, to be like, oh, you're crying now, you're healed. Yes. Oh yeah, I got frozen for a second. Can you see me now?
Yeah, I can see you now.
Okay, so basically, you know, their therapeutic practices at Carlbrook were to instill so much shame and fear and self-loathing in yourself to push you to crying or screaming.
Yeah.
That when you started crying, they're like, and that's the healing. And it's like, actually, you're just traumatizing these children.
Holy, sorry I interrupted. I just wanted to say, no, that's abuse. You are training us. You are conditioning us to accept abusive behavior. That is mind control. That is fucking brainwash. That has nothing to do with therapy. That's abusive AF.
Yeah, I mean, when I first started looking into cults and the tactics that they use, I was like, this is literally the blueprint for this school.
Yeah.
So much so, this is like, it's like gross to say. So these workshops, these therapeutic workshops, they each had like a Latin name and a theme. And again, they took place in the back of campus. They would be multiple days long where you're doing this screaming, crying bullshit from sun up to sundown. When you're outside of the workshop building, you're on bands with everyone. So you're not allowed to speak to anyone except for during workshop hours for the 4 to 5 days that these workshops are taking place. And then all of the workshop content is a secret to any of the people who haven't yet been through those workshops. So another cult tactic of secrecy, right? and keeping secrets and silencing. And I mean, the amount of people at that school that had experienced abuse or experienced sexual abuse, and none of this shit got talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, definitely... we're just gonna... Sorry, go ahead.
The fact that you were not allowed to communicate with each other out of the workshop, I mean, that's a way of controlling people and saying you cannot communicate with one another because we don't want you to start asking questions and influencing each other. So we're going to keep you separate because then you are easier to manipulate. That is mind control. That is abuse. That is breaking people down so you can mold them into whatever you want them to be and control them like a fucking puppet master. It's disgusting. I mean, I have full body chills. It's so gross, and I cannot comprehend that you had such a traumatic childhood and then you were sent into further abuse. My God.
Yeah, it only gets worse until it gets better.
It only gets worse. I'm waiting for you to say, and then I met my now partner and things turned.
We gotta feed more bulletin points before we get there.
Oh no.
But, you know, like I said, there's a ton of information about synonym schools out there. So, you know, for listeners, they can go dive into that. But I will say I did experience, not everyone at Karl Brook experienced this. I was one of the very unlucky few that also got to experience sexual abuse at Karl Brook as well. So one of the ways that that was gifted to me was, I'm not joking, upon each graduating class, each graduating student would be like, I'm leaving behind this legacy. Sometimes it would be like, here's a journal and you can write a poem in it, and that's my legacy. Sometimes it would be like, here's like a guitar that I'm leaving. I don't know. One of the legacy that I got handed down, which was assuredly made up by this predator, was weekly Friday lunches with a board member, with one board member, with a male board member. And if you were given that legacy from another student who was graduating, you had to take it. And lucky me, I was handed that fucking legacy of having to have lunch with a sexually abusive man every Friday while he would be stroking my legs and arms and trying to embrace me and trying to rub my scalp and pet my hair while I am literally just trying to keep my motherfucking head above water, graduate this motherfucking insane maze of a cult escape room. And the other extremely oppressive thing about Karl Brook was not only crews, like I discussed in that manual labor, but suspension, which I was in suspension for 10 months out of my 19-month stay. It was one of the longest suspension stays in Karl Brook history. And because it was a boarding school, suspension consisted of any hours that were not in the classroom or in group therapy. So mornings, lunches, evenings, and every weekend, I was sitting at a single desk, face forward, in a room of single desks. The only books I were allowed to read were recovery books, and there was no, you're on bands with everyone in suspension. No speaking, no looking at, no doing crossword puzzles, no crocheting or knitting. Face forward, eyes front, Saturday and Sunday, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, Monday through Friday. And that was how, and then you're also, when you're in suspension, You're also on bands when you go back to the dorm room to go to sleep. So you're alone all day. And then you go back to your bed and you're alone all night. And you can't talk to anyone. And if you do talk to someone, one of the students that's on the disciplinary committee is going to see it. And they're going to write you a crew. And you're going to do manual labor. You're going to be in suspension for longer. And so, you know, if the school wasn't fucking bad enough already, I was a big attention getter for discipline and punishment and suspension and bans. And I mean, it was, being there was torture. It was horrible. That was the first time that I was prescribed, you know, massive amounts of behavioral medications completely inappropriately, as all of the students were. I mean, I could go on and on and on about the abuse and the unethical practices that went on there. And as if I didn't already have, you know, enough issues and enough complex trauma and CPTSD going on, even though I obviously didn't have awareness that that was what was happening at the time. You know, I'm punished at that school for being dissociated, and I'm already dealing with never sleeping and so much insomnia and all of the physical issues that come along with that because of my sexual abuse that happened primarily in my sleep. And then comes along Carlbrook, where they have a hired staff to come and check the bunk beds 3 times a night with flashlights and make sure no one's run away, because that's how often it happens. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I start dealing with serious health issues from not sleeping. Drugs don't work. Coffee doesn't work. I spend 19 months at this horrible school. There are moments where I'm buying into the abuse. There are moments where I'm buying into this brainwashing. Luckily, at the end, I got out of there and I was like, this place was fucked up. There are unfortunately some people that still are out there and think that their synonym school helped them in some way. And, you know, my thoughts are with them. I'm honestly kind of grateful that I experienced so much complex trauma before going to Carlbrook, because I think my CPTSD and my dissociation were able to protect me a little bit.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the worst of my abuse. And yeah, so I got out of there after 19 months. You know, no connection to the outside world. We're not allowed to listen to music from the outside world, no TV from the outside world, you know, no internet except for applying for colleges. So it's like I've been on full lockdown for 19 months. There were 3 months before the 19 months where I'd been in the wilderness program. So it is 22 months where I have been not a part of society. And my parents and my advisor or fake therapist at Carlbrook are like, just go to college. Just go straight from Carlbrook 4 days later to college and you'll be okay. And I was like, hey, I can tell you right now, that's probably not going to go well. I would love to maybe come back home and maybe live at home and maybe like pay rent and get a job for 6 months. You know, I just need a little, after being in a complete abusive bubble for 19 months where my world was flipped upside down, I need to get my sea legs back in the real world. And everyone was like, no, you'll be fine. Just go to college. So didn't really have the ability to choose which college I was able to apply to, because again, didn't have the ability to access the internet at this school. So, you know, my parents really got to make that decision. I got to choose between two state schools. And as you can probably imagine, my year in college did not go well. Didn't really go to class. I was blackout drunk almost every single night. I was not doing well, and I was extremely depressed. Then I lose like the scholarship that I had at school, which like didn't really mean much. Like my parents could have still afforded to like pay for my college education, but they were like, well, we really don't want to. So sorry. So it's like, okay, well, that's the end of my college chapter. So then I moved to a small town outside of Atlanta where I had grown up, and I met a horrible man who went on to manipulate me into a 3.5 year abusive relationship with tons of physical, emotional, and sexual abuse. He would rape me and tell me that he enjoyed seeing me in pain. The longer our relationship went on, the more I developed serious health issues that were mysterious. No one knew what they were. I'd go to doctors, I'd go to holistic doctors. They tell me, oh, you're allergic to everything. Don't eat anything, but you have to eat because like you're a human, you need to stay alive, but yeah. Oh, you know, we don't know how to help you. So, you know, I'm in this abusive relationship. It started out with me telling him about the sexual abuse that I went through in my childhood, and he shed a tear about it. And to me, oh boy, was that just the first time anyone gave a shit. And that was a mistake, to trust that false show of emotion. I'm not going to sit here and diagnose people, but I do believe that that person had or struggles with narcissistic personality disorder from the upbringing yeah. they had. And mm-hmm. from the things that I saw reflected in my relationship with him and these trauma responses that I still have, as well as the relationship I had with my dad growing up in mm. that home.
Yeah.
And so I spent 3.5 years thinking that I had found someone that believed me and believed my story, and that we were going to be little spiritual bypassers together and do yoga and be vegan all day, and that was gonna be what healed. And the more that I fell apart, the more that relationship fell apart. And the more violence I experienced, I was held at gunpoint at one point. This is the type of relationship where we would go out in public and I would be humiliated. He'd be flipping tables, enraged with me over a simple mistake. I mean, I was a punching bag for 3.5 years.
My God, what? Why were you held at gunpoint? Was that him that did that?
It was what? Him that, and it was, a really desperate attempt of him trying to save the relationship and not have me leave him. Because he could tell that I was, obviously, I hadn't been doing well for years. I'm starting to have these serious health issues, which is extremely typical for complex trauma survivors. Mm-hmm. Tons of gut issues, tons of reproductive organ issues. And he wasn't helping me. He was hurting me. They were getting worse. You know, at this point in my life, I've moved around. He's decided to follow me. I'm like, okay, I guess we're in it for the long haul. So then I'm just really struggling with wanting to find purpose for myself. I've worked like 1.5 million jobs. I can never, you know, I've never been fired, knock on wood, but you know, they're never good enough because they're all toxic. They all stress me out. My nervous system can't regulate in any of them. Mm-hmm. No surprise, like, I'm not safe. And so I get a job working for the wilderness therapy company that I actually went to as a child. I think it was a way for me to kind of reckon my past. It was an environment I was comfortable in. It was a program that wasn't abusive to me, but has its own whole set of issues. But basically, as the story progresses, you know, he's trying to follow me as I'm like moving around the country. So he follows me as I settle down in this new place. And I start working this wilderness therapy job. And there is a practitioner there who does biofeedback, like neurofeedback. And him and I were close and we liked to talk a lot. And I start to trust him more and kind of tell him, you know, some of the things I'm experiencing and some of the mental symptoms, and some of the physical symptoms and some of my history with my step or my mother's husband, you know, my abuser. And he mentions, you know, I think you should get screened for PTSD.
No shit.
I'm like, huh. So I find a therapist in the area who says they, you know, do PTSD screenings and work with trauma clients and people who have experienced childhood sexual assault. And that was 10 years ago when I met her. I worked with her for 3 years. I'm grateful for her ability to see my symptoms and recognize complex trauma and complex PTSD, because I'm sure, as you know, especially as a woman, this is commonly misdiagnosed as bipolar, OCD, or like so many other things. And not
borderline.
That, yes, borderline personality disorder. And not that those can't all be present, or a couple can be present at the same time, but treating complex trauma as it is, as complex trauma, there is no getting around that. And so I'm grateful for that diagnosis. And that therapist also helped me realize the abusive relationship that I was in.
Yeah.
And she started saying, okay, here's some resources about people with narcissistic personality disorder. Here is the number of the local women's shelter. I want you to call them and do a phone safety screening. And you know, I'd already been making distance between me and this man. I knew 2 years prior to this, you know, the first time we'd moved in together, this man was unsafe. But this was also something I'm comfortable with and what I know. So I just keep going with it. And yeah, it wasn't until I had that phone screening with the women's shelter where they asked me all sorts of things about, has he ever put his hands around your neck? Has he ever raped you? Have you ever been held at gunpoint? Where the person on the phone tells me that I'm at extremely high risk for fatality via my partner.
Yeah, and he was stalking you. Did you not say that he was like following, like everywhere you were moving? So it was stalking. Was it because you wanted to leave him, and then he like threatened to, was it either unalive himself or you, or both maybe?
It was, so when we were still living together, he threatened to unalive himself. And you know, there's all, of course, there's all sorts of, you know, things you have to, oh, it's not you, it's me, and I need this for me, and I need this for me, which of course is true. I did need to get the hell out of that abusive relationship. But, you know, what it really took was, yeah, there was a very violent Christmas we spent together, and all of his siblings were going around the fire giggling about the physical abuse that they endured at the hands of their father. So my friend's father. And they're all like, ha ha, Remember when he locked us in the closet for days? And ha ha, remember when you had that black eye? And I mean, I had met this man at a time where he beat his wife, my boyfriend at the time's mother, before like a family dinner we all went to. So, you know, after spending this Christmas with them, and I'd already spent so much time with his family, and I'd already been making strides, and I'd already moved in two women into my house. And I was like, you need to go live with your family or find another living situation. And maybe we can still sort of be in contact. You know, I had to safely do it. I had to keep promising that I'd still give him a little part of me, a little part of me, a little part of me, until I had him out of there. I could block him, could block anyone associated with him, could move. But I mean, I still dealt with, I've been broken up with that person for 9 years. And the minute I made my business social media public, he followed it. And that was a year and a half ago.
No way.
Yes.
So he's still keeping an eye on you. That is absolutely terrifying.
Isn't it? And so, you know, through the women's shelter, I didn't have to stay there. I luckily, like I said, had like found a way to push him out and bring other women into my home and all this, but I did get an order of protection. So essentially like a restraining order.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have that just as kind of like, this is my little like security blanket, you know? Mm-hmm. But it was not easy. I was in that relationship for 3.5 years. And even after, you know, being away from it from so long and being out of, so, you know, it took me a while to get out of that relationship. And now, you know, I still worked with that therapist for a bit, but again, she kind of had her own issues and boundary issues, as a lot of therapists do. So I had to stop trauma therapy. I focused on getting out of that relationship and creating safety for myself. I worked 1.5 million different jobs, struggled with 1.5 million different health issues, which I still have to, you know, take care of and mitigate. But, you know, here I am against all odds, against an abusive infancy, childhood, teenage years at the hands of my parents, at the hands of an abusive babysitter, at the hands of, you know, abusive fake therapists and fake boarding schools and unethical psychiatrists and doctors, and getting out of a 3.5 year abusive relationship, dropping a shitty therapist that did everything she could to hang on to me and get me to be a self-paying client and convince me that I need 3 hours of therapy with her every week. Otherwise, it's not going to be enough and I'm not going to heal right. And if I go on vacation, I can't miss a therapy session. I've got to Skype with her. And
oh my goodness, that sounds very unhealthy and very absurd.
And so I'm grateful to have had her support in me gaining awareness around CPTSD, me gaining awareness around the extremely violent and abusive relationship that I was in, and her support in getting out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am with a new therapist. I have a partner who is one of the best people I've ever met in my life and on his own healing journey. And we've been together for over 4.5 years now. And talk about someone who has seen me at my lowest lows and has been there and been able to hold me and cry with me and cry for me. And I'm so grateful to him. I'm so grateful to have found him. I also did a lot of, you know, the abusive relationship wasn't the last long-term relationship I was in. I was in another shitty one. It wasn't abusive, but it wasn't great. And after that, I took a lot of inventory, especially as a trauma survivor, we're just trying to, and especially as a sexual abuse survivor, you're just trying to please people. You've linked your self-worth to your body. Even if you're not a sexual abuse survivor, if you're a woman, your body is your self-worth. That's what we've been told, which is obviously total bullshit. Our bodies are wonderful, beautiful instruments of expression and instruments full of tens of thousands of years of knowledge and wisdom. And yeah, with all of the complex trauma that I have been through and all the abuse that I've been through, I have still somehow been able to pull myself out of abusive relationships, abusive or unethical therapeutic relationships, see that I was not happy with my life. And even after getting these abusive people out of it and creating as much safety as I possibly could with the resources that I had, that I still was deeply wounded, depressed, unfulfilled, unhappy. And that's why I had to pick up my healing journey again. Not that I had dropped it, but I had to focus on more practical things. I went to massage school. I got my massage license, started to become really passionate about body work. Again, focused on what I wanted out of my next romantic partner and didn't even have to look. We just ran into each other. And, you know, this is years of me creating safety and just starting therapy again a year and a half ago with a therapist who the first question that she asked me was, what do you want? And that struck me as such an incredible question, because it is that simple. And that's something my other trauma therapist had never asked me. It's this first session with this woman, and she goes, what do you want? You're still talking with your mom. Do you want to be talking with her? And that's when I was able to reflect and realize that, yeah, I am still talking with my mom. And this constant oppression and constant fabrication of her lie to keep her comfortable to the man she is still married to, my abuser.
Wow.
That I couldn't talk with her anymore, and that I couldn't uphold her version of the truth because it wasn't the truth, and it was causing deep disease within me, emotionally, spiritually, physically. And so it has been 14 months since I've been no contact with my mom, a year and a half since restarting trauma therapy with a therapist that is the best therapist I've ever met in my life, who's focused on my goals. And I have trained my rescue dog as a service dog. He's now been a trained working service dog for a year now, like just over a year. And I mean, I'm doing therapy twice a week. I'm doing EMDR therapy. I've been doing acupuncture for a decade at a sliding scale acupuncture clinic that has been paramount in me connecting with my body, me connecting with my spirit, me connecting with my trauma and needing to move through it. I've found that that's like a great accessible resource. There's a lot of acupuncturists that try to open up sliding scale clinics because they know that it is deeply needed within the community. And something that I started recently is ketamine assisted psychotherapy. And that is expensive. That is not accessible by most people. And this is another thing with healing from trauma is, you know, I wasn't even able to go to therapy weekly, much less twice a week, until I got the exact right health insurance plan that, you know, took me knowing the exact right health insurance plan provider, because things are so convoluted and backwards and privatized with healthcare in the United States, and they want to keep you from having any control over your body or mind.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. I'm so fortunate that that's not a part of my issue, because I go to therapy twice a week too, and it's free. The government pays it. We also pay like a lot in tax here in Denmark. It's like 40%, or is it 42%? It's very high. Exactly. And
it's not as much as we're all like, oh, it's free, or technically I have a $0 copay at my therapy appointments. These things aren't free. I'm gonna owe lots of money in taxes at the end of the year because of like healthcare premiums. So, you know, it has taken me a long time to get to a place to create safety, to you know, be able to build resources, to be able to have my nervous system even in a place where I can confront my trauma. So, you know, it's not as easy as just telling someone, oh, go to therapy. As you know, you and I have been sitting here with, I mean, I've had way more horrible therapeutic experiences than I have good.
Same.
Yeah.
And the thing is, when you've been in fight or flight, freeze for decades, that's not something you just come out of, because that being in a dysregulated state becomes your normal. You know, for both of us, in my case, I was an infant when this shit started. So I literally, my system does not know anything other than being harmed and being abused. So like coming down from that, that requires major adjustment. It's learning to be in the world and relate to the world in a completely new way I have never been taught. And I feel like it's the same for you. There's been so much abuse. It has been so extreme for so many years. Yeah, you can't just go to therapy and that's it. No, it's your entire nervous system. It's every cell in your being. It's creating new neural pathways. You have to learn to be in the world in a completely new way. And that takes a long time, you know, because it's not part of your foundation.
No, it's not part of my foundation. And yeah, as you just, that was so eloquently said, it really is. It's so hard to explain to people who do not have complex PTSD. And it is, you know, I appreciate the fact that there is at least awareness around PTSD, but I mean, the major differences between PTSD and CPTSD are so massive. And exactly as you said, people that just have the diagnosis of PTSD, they had a normal, they had a baseline, they had somewhat of a regulated nervous system before a traumatic event that then shifted things. Whereas people like you and I, there was no baseline, there was no emotional regulation even being mirrored to us. So there's no ability for us to even begin to fathom safety within us until it's reflected to us.
To us, yeah, exactly. So we are essentially, we are learning. I don't know how old you are. I'm sorry if you've said it and I forgot it, but I'm almost 37. So I'm learning in the age of 37. I've been learning for a couple of years now, but still, it's still new. What safety is, what does it feel like? How is it manifested in my reality? How is it manifested in my body? What is the behavior of a healthy, safe person? What does safety and healthy look like within me? Because when you are so heavily conditioned, as we are, because we're complex trauma survivors, it's inevitable that that toxicity is within you. That unhealthy behavior is within you. So yes. It's like you have to like decondition your not only your nervous system, but also your behavioral patterns, because we do as we have been done by. It was Bowlby, our attachment father, that said, we do as we've been done by. Yeah, no wonder I beat the shit out of other kids and have been a very violent person. The most of my life, because violence was instilled in me literally from I was infant, and for over 2 decades, abuse, being violent, communicating in really horrible ways. How was I supposed to know that there were other ways to be, you know?
Absolutely. It is, so, as said, this is how so many of us, particularly mm-hmm. those of us that were abused, come to learn how to react. Like,
yeah,
my Polish grandfather, I will never forget this. You know, I've seen a lot of, again, Polish Catholic family, like, you know, physical punishment is part of that culture, mm-hmm. Or at least from what I was exposed to. And so, you know, I definitely saw my grandfather, you know, be more violent than this. But this example in particular, I feel like is such a good example of generational trauma, where mm-hmm. I watched my young cousin just, you know, is running in the house and he just like tripped and started crying. And so my grandpa snatches him up and he goes, did the wall do that? Like, you tripped on the wall. Did the wall do that to you? You know, trying to find something to blame.
Mm-hmm.
And my cousin's like crying, goes, yeah. And so he brings my cousin over to the wall and goes, kick that wall, kick that wall. You show that wall who's boss. And this is, this is how we learn things in my family.
Yeah.
This is how you act yeah. when someone wrongs you.
Yeah.
And it is up to each individual person to take accountability yeah. for yes. their own suffering, and not that I in any way brought this sexual abuse or physical violence or any type of abuse onto myself. I was a child. Mm. I didn't deserve it. No one deserves that.
Mm.
But the mental anguish from internalizing shame, small mistakes, or personalizing mistakes. Mm. It is life-ending for many complex trauma survivors.
Yeah, it is. It's brutal to work through. I mean, there are so many there are so many lies we buy into unknowingly. You know, we just buy into what we are told by our abusers, not knowing this is not true. This is an unwell person. This is a sick person speaking, projecting their shit onto me. It has nothing to do with, it's not rooted in reality. And also because we were children and there wasn't a healthy adult to like help us understand what was going on, we also told ourselves stories that weren't rooted in truth. For example,
the only way we could survive.
Exactly. That's my point. And I feel like that is probably, I mean, the shame and you know, unpacking all of those lies and realizing, holy shit, I've been living under all these lies for 25 years, or 30 years. I have been thinking that I'm unworthy and deserving of love and respect because that's what was instilled with me. And that's also the story I told myself. I must be mistreated because I'm unworthy. And I just carried that. And it wasn't until I was plus 30 something when I realized, holy shit, that was a complete misunderstanding. And because there wasn't a healthy person around there to help me navigate through it, I bought into this bullshit. And now it's my responsibility to, you know, mend myself, decolonize my entire system and create new neural pathways. And it's so bloody challenging. It's so, so hard because you are unlearning while you are simultaneously learning. So it's like you're driving on two tracks at once, you know, because so much was lost in our childhood.
What a great metaphor, driving on two tracks at once, because we're unlearning all of these trauma responses while we are simultaneously learning new healthy responses.
Yeah.
And I mean, the amount of times that my very healthy supportive partner has had to just say, Monica, I am not those people.
Mm.
And that, you know, and that's, you know, I'm coming from a place where I love you, you know, there's no subtext here.
Mm. Mm.
And that's to have those people that can help you see, hey, I get why you have that trauma response and not shame you for it, but also say, but you don't need to have that with me.
Yeah, I'm not them. Yeah. Yes. And I think it's so incredibly beautiful that you were able to work so much on yourself and cleanse yourself, if you know what I mean, that you were able to meet someone and settle for someone healthy. Because what can happen, and I mean, you even experienced it, when we just can continue down that unconscious path, we accept what we know and we settle for what we know, which is shit, you know, and that's what you experienced with your ex-partner. So I'm so happy for you that you found a beautiful, healthy partner that's on his own healing journey. I still get to experience that. I haven't experienced that yet, but I hope to experience it.
Well, I'll tell you that as totally wonderful as it is, and I don't know what I would do without him, there's obviously, you know, a lot in terms of dealing with years of sexual abuse that when you start to, okay, let me unpack this while I'm in a relationship, you know, I've started to feel all of these normal obligations that I want to fulfill as a partner. But luckily he's been like, you know what, you can focus on your journey and whatever you need to do, because I mean, it's a lot, you know, trying to deal with not just sexual abuse, but, you know, as a woman who has been continuously oppressed by men and learned to fear men, you know, and take care of them, that's obviously going to come up in a heterosexual, you know, household where we're having a romantic relationship. So I am so confident that you will be able to experience that and also revel in that soloness, because there are moments where I'm like, I wish I could just be crazy in peace, but luckily I have my massage studio attached to my house, so I can just come in here and have my own little moments to myself when I need to.
Beautiful. I'm so happy for you, and I just think I just think those types of relationships, even just this conversation that we're having with each other now, where there's this mutual understanding, they are so vital for our healing. Yes, yes, therapy is obviously, it's important, obviously. We're healing right. decades of trauma, but what is happening right now between us and what you have with your partner, it is so, so vital. It's a vital part of our healing.
As we were talking about, therapy is not accessible to a lot of people. Mm. And even in countries where there's, you know, better healthcare, you're still paying out the ass in taxes. And so, you know, finding people who believe you is a great place to start.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that I am so grateful to you, Jaslyn, for hearing me out, listening to my incredibly long, tangled web of my life. And the reason that I wanted to do this, not only for my own like healing journey, which is already like, I'm already like feeling like a new person after our conversation, but because the stories of the abuser are always centered.
Absolutely.
And we are always being made to empathize with the abuser. I mean, particularly if it's a white man.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's a man of color, there's definitely going to be a way more vilification of that. But there's still, you know, a lot of language around, you know, abusing minors as opposed to children.
Yeah.
There's still so much calling it what it isn't to try to handle these predatory men with kid gloves. And I just can't tell you enough how life-changing and important what you are doing is by centering and lifting up the voices of survivors, because that's who needs to tell the story. That's who's going to help other survivors heal. And that is who is going to shift the narrative. Mm. And I just can't even believe that I'm at where I'm at today, and that I'm running my own business and had to literally completely remove myself from like working for other people, having to commute for other people, having to show up for other people, to just be able to show up for myself and have time to start to heal. And I'm sharing this as a reminder to all the survivors that you can do it. And if I can do it, I promise you, you can do it. And I just want everyone to know that I'm here with them. I hear you, and I feel everyone's suffering and pain so deeply from all of these lived experiences that I've had. Mm-hmm. And I'm sharing my story because if I had lived in silence, I would not be here. And it is so important to believe people and to cherish them.
Yeah.
And I hope that when I listen back to this podcast, that I can give myself some hope, because this journey is not for the faint of heart. It is so hard to reckon with the fact that our mothers didn't fucking love us and they couldn't protect us.
Yeah.
And that is a wound that will never go away, but it will heal.
Yeah.
And it is a whole And I don't think the hole can be filled in perfectly, but I think we can start to put these pieces into it. And for me, all of the different, you know, healing modalities I've mentioned, if you can access them, amazing, try them, do them, but connecting with other survivors has been paramount for me, and that is free.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. Connecting with other survivors. I mean, I prayed for this. I prayed to connect with other CPTSD survivors. I didn't know what CPTSD was. I didn't know that it was complex trauma. There's so many things I didn't know. I didn't even know that I was a survivor of human trafficking until last year. There's just so many things I didn't know. But my point is, I think something deep within me knew that if I meet other people like me, that's going to create a massive difference for me. It's going to change something within me. And it has.
It has.
I prayed for this for years. And now, you know, I didn't know that creating a podcast and coming out with my own story was the medicine, was the answer to getting that prayer, what's it called, manifest. But
yeah.
I completely agree with you. Community is vital. And I have so many dreams of us coming together much more in person. I think it's so important that we connect, even though we're from all over the world, it doesn't matter. It's so important that we can connect and that we can sit and just, you know, hold that space for one another. And I even believe we don't even, okay, this is a podcast, so obviously we're talking, but it could literally be just a group of women sitting in a freaking circle at a retreat or not a retreat, I don't even care, and just looking at one another, just to be witnessed as we survived all of this shit. We are here against all odds. We're here right now with
literally
each other.
Literally again, all odds.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you have manifested this beautifully, and you are lifting me up and lifting up all the other survivors. And if there's something that I could end on, it's that, you know, if I can go through the amount of sexual, physical, emotional abuse that I went through, and now I've dedicated my life and my career to trauma-informed consensual body work to help people heal after a lifetime of destruction from sexual violence and violent touch. And if I can do that, you other CPTSD survivors out there can do it as well. And I'm rooting for all of you, and I'm rooting for you, Jaslyn, and you're just have been such an amazing soul and spirit. And I can't wait to just keep connecting, and I love to do stuff in the future and continue the conversation because this work is so important, and survivors are the only people doing it.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for not staying silent, for standing in your light, for speaking your truth, for reclaiming your power. I'm so honored to be able to voice your story. And I just know that there are going to be young women, there are going to be people that are currently living in silence that are going to hear your story. And because of you, they're going to be like, if she can do it, I can do it. And that's just beautiful. So thank you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Jaslyn. And I would not be here sharing my story if you didn't give me the confidence by doing the same. So thank you for this space. I love Miss Trauma Alchemist, and I'm only going to get louder and alchemize more of my pain. So thank you so much for taking hours to talk with me, and you are healing my heart over here. So thank you, Jasmine.
You're welcome, and thank you. That was it for today. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to rate Alchemical Voices and follow the community on Instagram. Until next time.